Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Welcome back to the Market Musings podcast, where today we're talking to Tristan Potas, the CEO of FDR, that's First Development Resources, which is, of course, for people who follow the Power Metal story, a spin-out of the Australian assets from that company into its own vehicle. And Tristan will be heading that up and leading that company when it does indeed IPO. So very happy and very pleased to be speaking to you, Tristan, to get a feel for where you've come from and how it's led to your position here, and of course what the vision is and the plans to build out the company. So welcome onto the Market Musings podcast. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Mark, and very pleased to be here today.
Yes, well, fantastic. Kenny, of course, as usual.
Yeah, there's no, well, the Punch and Judy show. Mark, so we are. So, yeah, it's great to have you on, Tristan. I've been trying to catch up with you for a few weeks, but we seem to keep missing each other. I'm really, really interested to hear your background, because I've been doing a bit of digging on yourself, and you've certainly had a colourful and successful career. So, and I think you even come from Mark's back door. You've certainly worked in Yorkshire anyway, so I know Mark will be keen to pick your brains about your time in Yorkshire. So, no, I'm looking forward to it. And as we said before the podcast started, Tristan, this podcast is really about people. So it is. I mean, you can have the best projects or assets in the world, but if you don't have the right people to manage these projects, then, you know, the company's going nowhere. So it's really a chance for you to tell us a bit about yourself, you know, where you grew up, what your education was like, you know, your first job, you know, if you went to university, successes, failures, you know, what motivates you, you know, all the things that people can possibly make a balanced investment decision on. So really the floor is probably yours for as long as you want to give us a potted history of Tristan Potas. It's a bit of a mouthful, but I got it out now, actually.
Yeah, well, that's of course, that sounds like fun. I mean, a colourful history. I'm not sure how colourful it is, but very happy to give you my background. So where do you want to start,
guys? Go back as far as you want, Tristan. Yeah, if you want to go to university, if you want.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. So you are right, Kenny. I am from Yorkshire. Mark's neck of the woods, and I started my mining career at Bulby Potash Mine, which is currently the only potash mine in the UK. I got the start there because I actually did my undergraduate degree at the University of Liverpool. I did a degree in geology and physical geography, but it certainly wasn't with a vocation in mind. Mm. And you could say I actually fell into mining, if you excuse the pun. I grew up in a seaside town, Whitby in North Yorkshire, and I'd always had an interest in the natural world, because, you know, the rocks around Whitby are globally significant. They are type localities for, you know, certainly for the Jurassic successions you find around the world, and was always interested in fossil hunting, but I never really thought I'd end up in a career related to what I studied at university. It was very much an interest rather than a vocation focused course. Mm. So I came back, I finished university. I was actually a baggage handler at Liverpool Airport for a few months, chucking bags. And that was an interesting job. Kenny, you asked about my, you know, early jobs. I think I've had every type of job you can imagine, certainly in the hospitality sector, working in bars, restaurants, you know, pubs and clubs. But equally, you know, growing up in a town like Whitby, which is very tourism dominated, there was always work of some type. So, you know, started working at an early age, about 11, I think, had my first paper round. So always been keen to turn my hand to any type of interesting job. The baggage handling thing certainly was interesting. Everything you hear about baggage handling, the rumors, that they're all definitely true. It was really fun actually doing that work immediately after graduating, but it wasn't going to be something I was going to do long term. So as I say, graduated, did the baggage handling, went on a around the world trip to Latin America, and when I came back, basically my parents were said, look, you've done this degree, you need to get to do something with it. And so a friend of the family actually was the managing director at Bowlby Potash, and I was able to secure 2 weeks work experience as working with the geology department, which led to a role as an exploration graduate geologist in that department, working, you know, a kilometre under the ground in what was, I think it was Europe's deepest mine, or one of the deepest mines, exploring and mining potash. After working there for about 15 months, I realised the opportunities in the industry were far more extensive and actually lucrative in other jurisdictions, and that led me to move to Western Australia, where I did my time in Kalgoorlie, working in the outback town in the goldfields, working for a company called Goldfields. Actually, I joined them as a graduate geologist, and I had the privilege of working with some really experienced geos and engineers in Goldfields. You know, some of the guys who came out of WMC, you know, the very well-renowned Western Australian mining group. So graduate program involved underground, open pit, resource geology and exploration. I was able to progress within Goldfields, up the ranks within the operational departments, geology department. So graduate geologist, you know, production geologist, project geologist. After working in Kalgoorlie for a couple of years, which was a lot of fun, I relocated to Perth, and I did a fly-in, fly-out 8 and 6 roster to the Northern Goldfields, working in Narrow Vein Gold up near Leinster. I did that for a couple more years. Really enjoyed my time working underground there. But then it was an opportunity to again relocate to Latin America with Goldfields that saw me move to Peru, you know, and to 4,500 meters above sea level, working as part of Goldfields International Exploration team, but were based at their Cerro Corona operations near Cajamarca in the Northern Andes. I was there for about 12 months, and then I was fully expecting to move back to Western Australia, but I was in the UK for a wedding, and while I was in the UK, this is back in 2011, I became aware of a company who were looking to develop a project basically in my own backyard, being North Yorkshire, and that was Sirius Minerals. And it was a series of fairly serendipitous events which put me in contact with the company. And like most people at the time, you know, we'd heard about this mining company considering a project, and there was a lot of rumor and speculation about what they were really going to do. So I was more interested as a local, but also I had an added interest in Sirius because I was working in the industry. And so, as I mentioned, there was this serendipitous encounter which put me in contact with Chris Fraser, the CEO of Sirius Minerals. And when he told me about what their plans were, and particularly about his previous involvement with mining projects in Western Australia, notably Fortescue Metals Group, and he told me about the team that he'd already assembled and his plans for North Yorkshire, it was quite easy for me to leave my role with Goldfields and move back home and be involved in what was a really exciting project. So I initially joined Sirius Minerals in August 2011 as their project geologist, and my role was to drill or manage the exploration drilling that was completed between 2011 and 2013, work with SRK Consulting to on the subsequent resource, but also was heavily involved in obtaining that social license to operate and working with the team to secure the planning approval in the North York Moors National Park, which, I mean, everyone will recognise that's no easy task. I mean, it's very difficult to even get double glazing installed in your barn conversion in the national park. So to consider an application which, you know, would involve the sinking of two shafts down to 1,600 meters and a 36.7 kilometer long, 5 meter diameter tunnel under the national park, you know, to mine in excess of 10 million tons a year, was a massive undertaking for the park. But for any of you who followed the Sirius story, you'll know that in 2015, the company was successful in that planning application. On successful planning, my role changed, and I joined the corporate development team as the investor relations manager for Sirius Minerals. And I was heavily involved in the stage one financing, where the company raised $1.2 billion of equity-like capital. On successful raising of that finance, you know, the money was immediately put to work in developing that project. The market knew that the company was going to come back for a second round of finance, which was going to be debt. The company attempted to raise that additional $3 billion worth of debt in 2018-19. But again, for those who follow the story, they'll know that the company were unsuccessful. And then the strategy for, I guess, keeping that project alive changed, and it resulted in Anglo American acquiring the project in March 2020. So during the time I was at Sirius, I was involved in pretty much every part of a junior mining company looking to do an incredible things, right? If you consider what Sirius achieved, you know, they were going to mine a mineral which no one had ever considered economic, to sell a product which didn't exist into a market which is probably one of the more conservative markets in the world, being the agricultural market. We were going to build this incredible project in a jurisdiction where mining just simply didn't exist, in a national park, and to do it with very little in the way of financial resource. Mm-hmm. And again, for those who follow the story, you'll know that Sirius was, you know, it was defined by these incredible milestones which were achieved, which everyone said were unachievable. And I guess, you know, to be part of a team which was delivering was a real exciting ride. But then when the stage two financing didn't go as we hoped at the time, clearly that was a crushing blow for everyone involved, not just the team, but obviously for the many shareholders which were invested in Sirius Minerals. So, well, I don't want to dwell too much on that. If there are any questions from you guys, I'm very happy to answer them. But, you know, after Anglo American acquired the project, I rejoined the project team where my role changed to a project engineer, and I was involved with a team to sink one access shaft to facilitate the construction of the 36.7-kilometer-long mineral transport system. We sank the shaft successfully down to 360 meters using a technique called blind bore. A blind bore is basically just a big drill with a 4-meter diameter cutting head, and we drilled that hole from surface down to the tunnel horizon in total in 50 days, and 20 of those days were delays as a result of unforeseen ground conditions. So that was a really successful time. Also, at the point at which I joined the project team, I also started doing a MSc in mining engineering down at the Camborne School of Mines, because I knew that, because my time with Sirius was so diverse, I didn't really fit into a box because my role had been so varied. I wanted to try and bring my qualifications back towards the mining sphere. And I felt that, an MSc from Camborne School of Mines was a great way to do that. Also, I guess, you know, as much as I rate Anglo American as a company, they're a fabulous company to work for, and they've got some amazing projects around the world. For me, I've always felt that the excitement in our industry lies much more towards the junior end, and so I kind of made the decision that I wanted to get back into the junior space. And again, a bit like with Sirius, it was a chance encounter that put me in contact with Paul Johnson at Power Metal Resources. And after a couple of conversations, again, it was actually quite easy for me to leave a stable job with a multinational mining company to join Paul and the Power team, and to be part of what is a truly exciting, you know, portfolio of projects of, you know, in a range of different commodities around the world. And to come back to this space is really exciting. You know, it is the juniors that scratch in the dirt and look for value, and it is the juniors that make the discovery. So, yeah, I'm really pleased to be part of Power, and then obviously the subsequent opportunity to lead the first development resources spin-out. Yeah. Again, it was a really great thing for me to get involved with.
So was that the I guess that wasn't the original intention, was to head up a company. It was just the attraction of, as you say, the small, the junior miners. That excitement just drew you to Power initially, and it migrated into what it is now.
Yeah, no, that's right. So, you know, I basically sent a speculative email to info@PowerMetalResources, just with my CV and a brief covering letter about what I'd done and what I was hoping to do. And I was quite surprised to get a call actually from Paul himself not long after I sent the email. So, and he did say, you know, you're probably quite surprised to be hearing from the CEO, but you know, your CV definitely caught my eye. And we had a great chat about what he was looking to do with Power, and you know, something about what he's building and what he's achieved in his career obviously really resonated with me. That led to a follow-up discussion with another member of the extended team. And then he said, look, do you want to come down to meet us down in Farnborough? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So I remember I did actually think that the offices were going to be in London. So I got to London and quickly realized it was another train journey out to Farnborough. And then when I arrived in Farnborough, you know, again, met some of the team. It is a small team, Power Metals, considering the number of projects which are in the portfolio. But I tell you what, it's such a fantastic team to be part of. And I got that sense, even on my first encounter with the team, that everyone is pulling in the same direction. Everyone's motivated to achieve the impossible. And again, a lot of similarities from what I experienced in the early days of Sirius. And so for me to get, I guess, a chance to potentially join another one of these teams was a real something I was immediately interested in. However, after half a day of discussing Power Metals with various members of the team, I still was a little bit unsure as to what Paul was looking for. And then it was then at the end of the day, I had another chance to speak with Paul. And that's when he suggested that there could be an opportunity to lead the FDR spin-out as the CEO. And you know, obviously, when someone presents that opportunity to you, I mean, first of all, I felt very flattered and very, you know, pleased that someone had recognised that my diverse career certainly had a place, because I definitely was a little bit concerned because of just how varied my roles in my career had been, that I wouldn't, you know, find my home. And again, the more I learned about Power Metal and the more I read into the projects which are in the portfolio, and specifically those associated with First Development Resources, it was very easy actually for me to go back to Yorkshire, have a conversation with my wife and just talk it through with her about, you know, what this opportunity was. And she was supportive immediately and encouraged me to say yes to Paul. And, you know, within a couple of months, I'd left Anglo American and I was on a train again back to Farnborough to be part of the team. So yeah, really, really pleased I made the decision to join and really excited about what's to come.
Does it mean you have to move to Australia, or do you get to stay in well, sunny Whitby?
I think the thing is, Mark, with these sorts of projects, you have to be prepared to take on anything really that comes your way. And you know, again, I've discussed it with my wife, and although it's not an absolute necessity at this stage, you never say never, right?
Yeah.
You do what's best for the project, and that's something which is really clear again with the Power Metal team, is that people are prepared to make sacrifices, whether that be working away from home for, you know, living in a travel lodge for 3 or 4 nights a week, or even if it came to it, relocating. I think the spirit of the team which is being built here, you know, I think people would be prepared to make those sacrifices if that was necessary. But then again, you know, Whitby's a very nice place. It's I'm not sure the beaches in Whitby are. Well, I know they're not as nice as they are in Perth, and that's no disrespect. Actually, the beaches are very nice, but the weather is much better in Perth. I got my permanent residency when I was out there last time, so the option of relocating is there. We'll just see how the project develops.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mark. I'll just jump in. Yeah, you're just touching something there. Obviously, you know, it's quite a journey. It's been Yorkshire to Australia, back to Yorkshire, and it looks like they're going back to Australia. I mean, the weather is chalk and cheese. You know, I imagine Yorkshire's very much like Scotland, kind of wet and miserable and bloody cold most of the time. And obviously you're going full circle to the heat and the intensity in Western Australia. How did you make that transition? You know, how did you adjust the way you sort of, you worked and sort of dealt with the situations that arose?
Well, I mean, weather-wise, look, Yorkshire, as we all know, is God's country. So, you know, the sun always shines in Yorkshire. You do get the occasional days when there's a bit of drizzle. But, working in different jurisdictions, you know, whether it be the climate or the culture, you know, it's something which I really enjoy, and it's certainly one of the appeals of working in what is a global industry, right? You know, I think the contrast and the the experiences that I've had working, whether it be in Yorkshire, in Western Australia, or the High Andes, you know, what I find so remarkable about the mining industry is that it's the optimism that you find in companies that are looking to develop projects or who are working on existing projects. You know, it's the old cliche, everything in our lives is a result of mining or agriculture. We can't live without it. And so when you're working with people who actually recognize the value of the industry on a global basis, they are really inspiring places to work. You know, and mining's not going to go away. As an industry, it's so integral to our lives. And if we're looking to achieve the, you know, this transition to a cleaner, greener future, we certainly can't make that switch to alternative energy sources or whatever without bringing mining along with us, because, you know, you can't have one without the other. So I guess that for me, Kenny, you know, anywhere I've worked, what I've always found is that people who are involved in mining at any, you know, whether it be the operational, the exploration side of things or the construction side of things, you know, is people enjoy their work because it is so diverse, and they know that what they're doing contributes to our global society. You know, you should always have a job in mining, and it's a wonderful industry to get to be involved with, and it's a wonderful industry to, you know, to be part of.
Mark, I'll let you jump back in there.
Yeah, I think what you were saying as well, just then, about you were a bit worried about your diverse career, not exactly knowing where it perhaps might fit, but I think that that is actually a strength as well. I had a similar thing in my life, not a professional anything really, because I had to lend my hand to so many different tools within the professions, let's say, within the creative media industry, and that always did concern me. How can I go and get another job if I needed to? I can't go to the BBC and say I'm a professional cameraman. But I think having that multi skill and that multi experience you can lend your hand to quite a lot of things, and it gives you've touched everything, so you know like how things work. So I actually think that is a strength. It does perhaps, I don't think it narrows your career path. It probably broadens them, makes you a more rounded person, even though it might be more difficult to try and touch or tangible think what you might do. So actually, I think as a CEO of a company, that is a great skill to have.
Yeah, no, I think the more I'm finding out about the role, I certainly agree, Mark. I mean, I think what I've learned is that, you know, ultimately it comes down to communication, right? And if you've worked in all different parts of the industry, in fact, in all different industries, if you're able to communicate, you know, you can achieve things. And it is, in my opinion, it's quite a simple thing, really. You know, you're open, you're transparent, you're honest, and you keep people informed, then, you know, what more can you do? Obviously, you've got to deliver, and I'm not trying to downplay, because clearly, you know, having a responsibility for a business and what will be a publicly listed business, there is a lot of other things that you have to be mindful of. But I think, you know, at the core of it, it's about, you know, good communication across the board.
Yeah, no, I agree. Shareholders, yeah, need that communication to keep following the story. So, it's very important.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting sort of jump, Tristan, from project geologist to IR manager. I mean, how did that come about? It's not your kind of normal sort of path. Was it just something that floated your boat at the time?
I think what it comes down to is, again, being part of a small dynamic team, everybody had to turn their attention to parts of the, you know, what needed to be done, which was outside of their normal, I guess, defined role. Anyone who works in the junior end knows that you can't just focus on one thing. There's always a million things that have to get done. And I think the IR thing came about at Sirius because, well, first of all, I had knowledge of the project. I had knowledge of the resource, but I was also from the local area. So when, you know, for example, when you're doing an investor site visit and it's approximately 50-60 miles from one end of the project to the other, you know, you spend a lot of time on a bus, and to be able to fill some of the awkward silences with the interesting, or what I thought were interesting, anecdotal stories about Whitby and the surrounding area, I think people actually started to enjoy the site visits, you know, beyond just finding out about Sirius Minerals and the project. But also I think that the credibility I was able to bring to the story by having that understanding of resource and geology and just, you know, the what we were looking to achieve ultimately. And you know, I do find that I do enjoy communicating with people, and I enjoy breaking it down to a level where, one, it's interesting, and two, people can understand it. And I think, you know, the team at Sirius recognize that, and the investors seem to enjoy their visits. And ultimately, you know, if somebody enjoys something, hopefully they're going to remember it for all the right reasons. Obviously, that was obviously secondary to being able to provide, you know, the facts about what we were looking to achieve. But, you know, again, it provided me with an exposure to a different part of the market, which was very interesting. I mean, mining projects are massive, right? And they don't just spring up like mushrooms overnight. There's a huge amount of work that goes into, you know, not just the point at which you get to the financing stage, but, you know, the hours, days, weeks, months, years of effort that goes into getting all the necessary documentation and, you know, studies in place to allow you to go to market and raise finance. So having an understanding of how the market works was hugely beneficial in terms of just my understanding of the industry as a whole. And then obviously with this new role that I've taken on, and I would never ever profess to be an expert, but just to be able to understand the mechanics of what we're looking to achieve from the financing side of things, what investors want to hear from, you know, the investor relations side of things. So being able to communicate an effective narrative is very important. You know, although, you know, the mining industry, if it's commoditized things, you know, you aren't necessarily in direct competition from a sales perspective, but you are in competition to looking to secure money from one pool of capital. So if you can stand out and provide a credible pitch, you know, I think no one should ever underestimate the fact that Sirius Minerals was able to secure or raise $1.2 billion of equity-like capital. I mean, that is a staggeringly eye-watering amount of money. And it was done through a lot of hard work and communicating a story which, as I say, resonated with investors. And, you know, if I've learned anything from that process is that, first of all, there's a huge amount of work that goes into these things, but you've got to be able to stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yep.
I suppose as well, obviously now you've got the CEO role at First Development. It gives you a good rounded, you know, sort of experience of what you need to drive a company forward. You know, you've got the technical background, you've got the investor relations background. So it's a good rounded approach and should hopefully stand you in good stead.
Absolutely, I hope so. I mean, these things are never easy. You've just got to go after it ultimately. And we've got a great team, and we're building a fantastic team with, you know, the necessary experience to give ourselves the best chance of making, you know, a significant discovery.
Yep.
Yeah, I liked what you said about the bit of an insight there into the POW team as well and the dynamic. That's a nice little thought there for investors, I think, to take home the shared vision, the shared drive. So
yeah, I think, you know, if you can just give me a minute, I definitely want to expand on that, because for me to take the risk professionally and obviously to put my, I guess, my personal circumstances at risk with my, I've got a wife and two kids, and you know, when you do make that jump, you want to be sure that the team that you're with are going to deliver. And I know it's, you know, I don't think it's true across the board. I really genuinely believe there's something special about POW Metal Resources and the group that we've got. We are a small team, but it's such a fantastic place to work. You know, we're led by the vision that, you know, that Paul has, and we're building out from that vision. And again, just to link it back to Sirius, I think there's a really good thing I learned there as well, insofar as if you've got the vision and a good idea, and you surround yourselves with people who support and encourage that idea, you know, you can achieve incredible results. And so I've had the privilege of working on a project which, you know, we were able to deliver up to a point, and then to be able to take a lot of that learning forwards and do it with a motivated team, it just makes the job so much more enjoyable and so much more achievable when you're not fighting against each other and everybody's pulling in the same direction.
Spot on. Yeah. So moving on to First Development Resources, I think it'd be good for potential investors to understand what you guys have. You know, I know you've got a property in the Northern Territory, but it's mainly a Western Australia focus. Can you give us a sort of high level overview of the projects and the commodities that you're targeting, etc.?
Absolutely. So yes, I mean, look, it would be easy to think that it is just a Western Australian focused company, simply because that was where the original portfolio was based, but you know, I definitely will come on to Celtic in the Northern Territory in a minute because it was certainly not just a single state play. In terms of the Western Australian assets, you know, we've got the Wollal project in the north of the Paterson, and Wollal is a geophysical exploration play. You know, we've got these really intriguing magnetic bullseye anomalies which have been identified in the desktop studies which have been completed. And you know, if anyone who follows gold, particularly in Western Australia, you know, no one's going to be able to look past the success of Greatland Gold's Havieron. And you know, Havieron discovery was a geophysical anomaly which was drill tested and then turned out to have, you know, mineralization. Again, I know enough about it to talk with any great confidence, but that I guess is a very high level summary of what they had initially. We have been able to acquire, you know, a huge amount of publicly available information, which we've then analysed. And we, based on that analysis, we were able to identify three magnetic bullseye anomalies, creatively termed the Western, Eastern, and Border anomaly, because one's in the west, one's in the east, and one straddles the tenement border. and we've now recently, you know, announced that we have completed the desktop study, and our primary targets being the eastern and the border anomalies. We've now got an estimate of depth of cover from surface. So the eastern anomaly is around 800 meters deep, whereas the border anomaly is around 330 meters deep. But because it is a geophysical play, you know, we've only been able to use airborne magnetics, ground gravity surveys, and various seismic surveys to target these anomalies, which you know, on the back of a successful listing, we will be deploying capital to drill test them. Obviously, at this stage, we know there are similarities from a geophysical signatures perspective to Greatland Gold's Havieron, but until we stick a borehole in there, you know, we don't know whether there's any, you know, mineralization at all. So we're obviously very much looking forward to getting to that point, because we can't do any more surface work, we don't believe. But beyond just the Wollal project, which is our flagship project, we also have the Ripon Hills and Brayside West project, also in the Paterson. And these are a bit more conventional. You know, we are able to look at different data sets. It is in an area which is well known for manganese. Now, we don't have the manganese rights, but we believe that there is the possibility of gold and copper mineralization or base metal mineralization there as well. So we also recently announced that we'd kicked off an in-depth desktop study to really understand what potential targets may exist in that area. And what's been really good in my position as CEO is that, you know, I've inherited this portfolio of projects, and there's a huge amount of work which went into these into the Western Australian projects, not just Wollal, but also in Ripon Hills and Brayside West. And you know, again, to touch back on what I was speaking earlier about, you know, communicating, it's also about relationships, especially in the mining industry. It's a massive industry, but it's such a close-knit community as well, and especially in Western Australia. So, you know, when Power acquired First Development Resources and the projects, we certainly didn't just, you know, cast off the team, which had done a huge amount of work before. We continue to work with the vendor group to basically try to get as much information about these prospective targets as we can. So, you know, for example, the geologist that we've partnered with for the desktop study, he's been working in that area for over 40 years. You know, he's got a huge amount of site specific knowledge of these targets, and you know, working with him and his network to basically identify and work up these targets is something that, you know, I'm certainly interested to see where this desktop study may take us. It's, you know, it's at this stage, they are things that we're investigating. We haven't got a solid target as yet. That's the purpose of the study, but you know, we look forward to updating the market and investors when we do reach that point. Now, turning to the Northern Territory, CELTA project, for me, I think it's fascinating. You know, we were able to secure this project, and I would suggest that it is probably based more on a neurology play, which, you know, people you can take that with a pinch of salt, but you know, if you're going to go looking for elephants, you go to elephant country, as the old saying goes. And you know, CELTA is surrounded by some really big players in the industry and who hold ground, who we know are, you know, very prospective for rare earths and uranium mineralization. And you know, the CELTA project, I think it's one of those ones which was probably overlooked, or and it, you know, it's had many people that have picked up that ground and then have had to dispose of it for various reasons, probably more driven by market conditions. But I think we've been able to acquire it at a point when, you know, demand for potential uranium projects and demand for rare earth elements is only going in one direction. And it comes back to what I was saying earlier about this push on a global scale to more sustainable green forms of fuel, or, you know, futuristic technologies, whether it be, you know, electric vehicles, more battery power or whatever, you know, that industry cannot progress without the delivery of the raw materials, which ultimately come from the ground. So the fact that we've been able to acquire this project, which we know is prospective, you know, is really exciting. We have initiated the desktop study, and again, I'm really looking forward to seeing what that produces in terms of targets. And you know, I can't provide any more information at this stage, simply because the study is underway. So I'm really looking forward to being able to provide updates as and when in the future. And just, you know, to round that passage out, if you like, we are actively looking to bolster the project portfolio across Australia with new projects. I mean, ideally, we'd like to find something which is a bit later stage, you know, ideally with a resource, or, you know, I'd settle for a walk-up drill-ready target. But, you know, the market is very buoyant in Western Australia, and it's ensuring that what we do, if we do acquire, we do get value for money. But again, you know, the board that we are assembling for FDR, I believe, you know, we've got the technical expertise, the country-specific expertise to really give ourselves, again, the best chance of acquiring the best projects, to give ourselves the best chance of making a discovery.
Yeah, it certainly sounds an exciting time for you guys. And just hopping back to Western Australia, I mean, you mentioned Greatland Gold, but I mean, Rio Tinto have also got like a massive footprint in that area as well, Newcrest as well. And I think from memory, because I'm quite handy with the mineral mapping systems in Australia, I think Rumble Resources was in the area as well. So there's certainly quite a few deposits in the area already.
Definitely. Look, Kenny, there's a huge amount of activity, right, which creates problems, because, you know, trying to secure drilling rigs is one, you know, is never easy. But the point is that there's a lot of people focused on the areas where we are focused, and you'd hope that everyone has got the same idea, i.e. that there is potential there. You mentioned Rio Tinto. Obviously, I've mentioned that we've got the border anomaly, that we've got 70% of the size of the border anomaly on our side of the ground. The other 30% is on Rio's ground. But then they've also got the Winu project, which, you know, I mentioned about the geophysical similarities between Wallala and Greatland Gold. But, you know, similarly, there are interpreted geological similarities in terms of our position in the basin up there in the Paterson, which do, you know, have similarities to the location of Rio's Winu project as well. So there's a lot for us to go at. But really, we now need to start putting some boreholes into these things, whether that be at Wallal or, you know, Ripon Hills, Brayside West, or Celta. We need to take the project to the next level, which is obviously what we will do with the proceeds of the listing once we get to that point.
Yep. And what is the sort of listing process and timescales? Are you able to give investors an insight to what's going on or what stage you're at the moment, Tristan?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about it loosely, I guess. I mean, I've got the luxury of leading the second spin-out of Power Metal Resources, you know, Golden Metal. They're further down the track than we are. And I guess they're the guinea pig, if you like. And as I say, I get the luxury of being able to learn from the challenges that they've faced. You know, they completed the pre-IPO before Christmas, and they're working towards a listing. You know, the listing process is never easy. And, you know, we'll have to go through the same challenges that they've been through, albeit with their insight and experience to help guide us. So I think, you know, it's safe to say that in order for us to proceed, we have to finalise the board for FDR, which we've done that. One, now the board is finalised, it's a question of preparing the necessary documentation, getting it verified by the, you know, the legal teams, to allow us to basically launch that pre-IPO raise. As I've discussed, the proceeds from the pre-IPO will be largely used to cover the listing costs, but also hopefully provide some working capital to allow us to maintain that momentum across the projects. Now, you know, once that pre-IPO is done, all of our attention turns to ensuring that we can achieve a listing in the most efficient time possible. And that, you know, that is really where the board will come into its own, because in exploration, there's only so many things you can control. You know, when you're drilling boreholes, there's always going to be issues that are going to come and bite you on the backside, or when you're surface sampling, or it's the time it takes to get to site to get the samples to the labs. When it comes to the listing process, although it's not always straightforward, you know, it's up to the team to basically complete the necessary documentation, working with the advisors and basically pulling everything together to allow us to list efficiently. So although that's a very long-winded answer, Kenny, I would hope that within, I think we said previously, we'd look to target, you know, around three months post pre-IPO to get to that listing point.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables and curveballs that can be thrown at you. I mean, not every listing is the same. You know, sometimes it's, you know, that prospectus can get bounced backwards and forwards multiple times. Mm. So, yeah, yes. It's very hard to pinpoint a date. But no, I'm certainly looking forward to it, and it's certainly an interesting footprint that you guys have got. I mean, is it purely an Australian focused vehicle, or are you looking for projects in other countries?
No, that's the intention, Kenny. We're looking to really, to be an Australian focused exploration business, and you know, we want to try and keep the range of minerals that we're looking for fairly narrow as well. You know, we are going to be a small lean team. We don't want to overstretch ourselves in terms of what we can or can't achieve. But you know, it's a fabulous jurisdiction to work in, and if there's opportunity anywhere, I'd suggest Australia is a good a place as any to be looking.
Mm. Yeah. Excellent.
And running up to the IPO and the pre-IPO, I guess you're not sitting around doing nothing, Tristan. There's various data collection or analysis that you'll be doing in preparation to hit the ground running.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, at the minute we are still bound to Power Metal Resources, and the opportunity to work on this with somebody with Paul's experience, right? I mean, he's been around the block several times. He's had some great success. He's had some challenges along the way as well. But to be able to be guided by him is a real comfort to me. It is, like I say, I'm stepping from I'm stepping into a role which is my first foray. I don't want to downplay my capabilities, but it's always good to be able to learn from people who've been through that process and that experience. So that's absolutely, I'm spending as much time as I can with Paul, albeit his time is precious, you know, with 14 projects around the world that Power Metals are working on. But you know, and obviously looking at what at Golden Metals, what they've done, you know, working with Oliver to basically understand the challenges and speaking with people who've been to that experience, because you know, we're not looking to reinvent the wheel. We're doing something which is done regularly, and I'm certainly not too proud to ask for help when I need to.
Okay. And both the projects are early stage, aren't they? The surveys have been conducted. There are anomalies there, but has there been any drilling on it in the past? Or
there are various different data sets. Now, up at Wallal, there have been no boreholes which have been drilled specifically on the targets that we are looking at. Obviously, there are boreholes in the area. Mm. Clearly, Rio have drilled on the other side of the border, albeit quite a distance away. So it is blue sky at Wallal, but again, we've carried out a very disciplined, multi-layered approach to the exploration, where we've looked at all the different data sets, we've brought them together, and through that due diligence and that, as I say, that methodical approach, working with some really, you know, excellent consultants, we remain confident that the targets are absolutely worth following up. In terms of Brayside West and Ripon Hills, now look at Brayside, we know that Rumble Resources are drilling in that region, albeit for manganese. So there's a huge amount of geological data. We'll see where we get to with the mineralogical side of things. At Ripon Hills, you know, historically there's been, again, a whole range of different companies which have passed across that ground over the years. And there's been various recordings of various occurrences of different minerals. You know, we're taking all that information and we're bringing it together to identify these targets for further investigation. And then over at Celta in the Northern Territory, it really has been stream sediment sampling, surface sampling, and neurology which is driving this. So you are right, Mark. It is blue sky and early stage exploration, but that's exploration, right? there comes a point where you've got to just go out. You've got to follow the data, and you've got to give something a go. And yeah, it's not without risk, but it's also, you know, incredibly exciting as well. And you know, I just can't wait to progress these projects beyond the point at which we are, because it's not just, you know, it's not just starting from a point of nothing. There's a huge amount of work which has been done by some really technically, you know, astute people over the years. And as I say, I've inherited all this knowledge and experience, and now it's about funneling that and taking us on to the next step.
Okay, good. And then, as you mentioned earlier, potential walk-up project or other, if and when appropriate, to get some other project in the portfolio.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. I guess what's important as well, Tristan, is that obviously there's going to be shared resources across the various companies. Are you guys going to be working out of the sort of same office as POW? Is that the plan?
Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah, as it stands. I mean, obviously there'll be the necessary, you know, Chinese walls established, if you like, to ensure that we maintain our integrity. But again, you know, just being able to be part of this collective with who have a very similar mindset, and that is about, you know, getting after these things and going after potential opportunities. You know, bouncing ideas off people, and you know, in any way we can, you know, within the realms of what we're allowed to do. Then, you know, it's a great dynamic place to be working. That being said, you know, the board that we are assembling and the, you know, the necessary appointments for our Australian assets, you know, they are based in Perth. So, you know, I'll be getting out there as often as I can, and as and when needed to help push things on the ground. You know, I'm actually due to head out to Western Australia and to the Northern Territory actually on the 18th of March. Now the border situation nationally in Australia has been resolved, and definitely the border situation in Western Australia. You know, I'm getting out there next month. The intention is to visit all these project sites, because I think it certainly benefits if you're going out to speak to investors. If you can say that you've been to the ground, and you know you understand the challenges that we're up against, and look people in the eye and talk with confidence about the project, I think there's a lot of value in that. But equally, being able to go out there and spend time with the geologists on site who are doing these desktop studies, you know, it's so important that as a team, we get to drill down into their knowledge base to allow us to form the narrative to take it forwards, but also just to get out there and meet the various teams that have been helping the project to this date. So whether that be, you know, the companies like Resource Potentials, who have been doing all the desktop studies for Wallal, you know, with the vendor team and the guys who've been doing our reconnaissance trips up to the Paterson, spending time with them to understand the challenges that we might face, meeting with prospective drilling contractors, meeting with the legal teams who are, you know, doing a fantastic job in terms of negotiating the heritage agreements with the various native title groups, meeting with some of the board who are based in Western Australia. You know, I definitely want that face time with them to basically allow me to impart to them what my vision is for the business, but also learn from them. You know, these guys have been in Western Australia for decades. They understand you know, the industry a lot better than I do over there, despite, you know, having spent some time working out there. You know, as I mentioned, understanding their networks, understanding what they as non-executive directors can bring to the table. You know, I think there's a huge amount of value in getting out there when I can, but equally, you know, making sure I'm back in the UK as in, you know, to help push the business forward in terms of the listing process and working with investors to help achieve that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. No, it sounds like there's a lot of work going on in the background, and you know, sometimes people don't see that. They just, you know, just say when you're going to list, but they don't appreciate the amount of effort and time and paperwork that you need to wade through to get there. So
you're right, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but it is a good point, because, you know, it's certainly not 9 to 5 working in these types of environments. It's and you know, you're going to get called upon to do stuff at, you know, 24 hours a day. I mean, one of the good things about working with a team largely based in Australia is that the time difference means that when I wake up on a morning, you know, there's been a huge amount of work that's been done overnight, but during the day in Australia, then I can pick it up and take it forward. So it is a bit like a 24-hour working day in some respects. But as a result of that, you've also got to be on hand and available when required. And again, linking back to the power mentality, that's something which is shared across this small team, is that everyone understands that, you know, to get these things going, there's a lot of sacrifice that has to be made, whether that be, you know, time away from family, time away from friends, and just devoting a lot of yourself to these projects. That's what it takes. And it's either you, if you don't buy into that, and I'm not just talking specifically about power, it's in any part of industry, isn't it, really? If you're doing something which is difficult, you've got to give yourself and you've got to make the sacrifice. And that's again, something that's really good about the Power Metal team and absolutely the FDR team, is that people, or the team that we are assembling, certainly are prepared to do that.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, I'm looking forward to the next couple of months, Mark. Anything more to add?
No, I'm looking forward to the next few months, yeah, to see what's happened. But you've given us a very good insight into what you plan to do there. And obviously where you've come from, Tristan. So thank you very much for your time and we're watching this IPO process with interest.
Thanks, Mark and Kenny. I mean, one thing I will just quickly say is that if anyone does have any questions about First Development Resources, you know, we are available. You know, there is the info at firstdevelopmentresources.com, which I monitor. And I think through Power, everyone knows how to get in contact with the company. And if people do follow Power Metal, they will know how accessible we are as a business. So any questions at any time, or, you know, concerns about what we're doing or suggestions, we're always very happy to receive.
Brilliant. All right. Well, I appreciate your time today, Tristan, and no doubt we'll be speaking again soon.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Tristan.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.